Welcome to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's queer media, and today we are talking about GLBT representations in anime and manga. Is it? Oh, okay, I'm hearing a terrible echo, so I'm not sure if something is...
The mic is on?
Yeah, I mean, all the mics are on. Anyway, these things happen. I'll figure it out. So, joining me today, well, I'm Luke Smith, and I'm joined by...
Jake Nguyen, how are you doing?
And Josh Romeo. Nice to be back.
Absolutely. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about maybe kind of why this topic was chosen? You know, are there GLBT representations in manga and anime, and what is the difference between manga and anime?
I think it's interesting to talk about manga and anime, because most, like, in popular American culture, most people... use anime as an umbrella term for visual art, visual cartoon,
right.
Like animation from Japan, which is technically not true and true at the same time. So anime, it's... Well, let's start with manga. Manga is a... If you know what comic book is, it's similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
But manga is Japanese art, and they have a type of comic book style that's kind of very special to Japanese. And they have multiple genre, and they have it's very creative what these manga do, because it's more than just comic books. Usually American comic books center around a protagonist and it has a specific point and goal. Manga is not limited by that.
Mm-hmm.
And usually manga can usually build anime as an animation out of the specific manga plot, which is really interesting because you can translate multiple type of media platform. But then in terms of LGBT representation, it's usually more subtle, I think. There's many multiple examples. Americans are probably familiar with Sailor Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched it? Like, when was the first time you ever watched Sailor Moon?
You know, to be honest with you, and... I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of backlash for this.
You
I've never
not...
watched Sailor Moon.
Oh,
no. Yeah,
seriously?
No. I know, growing up, it was not a...
Oh, yeah. I guess. I remember, because I grew up in Asia, and manga was a huge thing. They published this thing in books, and you can buy them for like a dollar to a cent, and it's amazing. It's this great source of entertainment. But then when you watch anime, the Sailor Moon and stuff... I remember I watched the whole thing and read the whole manga, which is so much longer than the actual movie. Yeah, obviously,
mm-hmm.
It always is. But in America, they actually did not produce the second part.
Oh.
Because in the first part, I think it was this, which one was it? Was Uranus and Neptune, the two sailors, which basically have superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
So they are basically glorified. If there's an equivalent of Amazonian goddess like Wonder Woman, then that would be like, you know, the planet sailors who have powers and they do all this kind of stuff. But they are, one of them have, I think it was Uranus has like a more like a tomboyish look. And then when they transform, they kind of gender bend it. So in America, in the dub version with English, they made it so that they look like cousins, but they are technically kind of lesbian
right.
lovers.
Right.
Which is really interesting because when you look at it, they're holding hands and they're doing this a lot of these romantic gestures, and then just like cousins. Well, I mean, if you think about it, it was because Sailor Moon was out in America around, I think, was it 2000? So they made it, I guess they kind of avoided the lesbianism subject.
Mm-hmm. So you think that the Americans kind of toned it down and made it, you know, inadvertently a bit incesty, as opposed to that point?
I mean, I guess it's during the time. I mean, if you look at the general scheme of things, they were trying to appropriate Sailor Moon, which is a Japanese art, a Japanese storyline, to American culture. In the series, in their normal life, this girl dressed fully as a tomboyish guy, and you know, a lot of people mistake it for her for a guy. So it's, and then Clover, which is the, I think it was a company that handled the distribution of Sailor Moon, they cut off the second season because in the second season there's three sailor, it's so much more extensive, there's more sailors involved, mm-hmm. and there's like these three sailor stars who became like this group, like a boy band, and they're really attractive, and they're like, as they're trying to find their lost princess and, you know, stuff like that, alien. It's really funny. You should definitely watch Sailor Moon if you have not. But so when they transform, they basically become female. So they are basically the first transsexual characters, animated characters, to be on TV.
Transgender in this case.
Yes, transgender, I guess. Technically, it's never specified. They were depicted as male boy bands. Mm-hmm. And then when they transform, it's depicted as female. So whether or not they actually become transgender or transsexual, that's never specified itself. But
well,
it's...
Well, for our listeners, it's worth defining the difference. Mm-hmm. So transgender is usually your representation. So if you're presenting as male or female, that's usually, you know, going that way. And it's interesting because, I mean, we're also looking at things like drag at that point. So are they performing as females? But it's not really entertainment because they're heroes. So is it... Mm-hmm. It's a very... Like, it culturally, it doesn't translate.
Right.
Transsexual is somebody who's moving from one sex to the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to kind of define that.
So I just find it really interesting that when I was reading about it, I remember specifically because I watched the entire thing, and then I went to America, and I was like, no one have ever seen the second season. I was like, huh. Well, no one who, you know, if people are watching it, because I think
like
Sailor
on
was,
TV or
yeah, yeah, if they're watching on TV, they probably have not seen the second season. I was like, why is that? I look it up. I was like, that is heavy. Yeah. I mean, it's just the implication of it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, while you're talking about this, this brings to mind another example of, I think, another anime that would be pretty prevalent here in North America, Pokemon.
Oh,
the Pokemon
yeah.
anime, yeah, which I guess...
I totally had a crush on Ash.
There you go.
Like that. But,
which is, it's...
It's, I mean, when it comes to anime and manga progression, it has a lot to do with the idea of Japan. Like, the way I view manga is yeah. that they have, and manga and anime in general, is that the Japanese have a more relies on how they project themselves and how technology and how everything assimilates together, including the personality, you know. So I think the identification of a sexuality or gender in anime is usually very blurred or very vague
mm-hmm.
for not for a specific reason, but just for the fact that they identify themselves more in a creative way. So there's a lot of examples in anime or in cartoon for Dragon Ball Z. A mm-hmm. lot of aliens LGBT history, movie history, most LGBT characters are flamboyant, mm-hmm. evil antagonists.
We talked in a previous episode about stereotypes and tropes mm-hmm. and kind of these stereotypical gay roles in Western movies. So it'd be interesting if that kind of translates a little into like... Because Dragon Ball Z, is that Japanese or American?
Oh, Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. So it's actually Japanese, but mm-hmm. then it got really super popular after it... I think it was Nickelodeon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of them
right.
bought it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it became really big in America. You know, with the kamikaze. I honestly have not watched the whole thing. Just don't hate me for it.
It's lies. He's watched every episode twice.
Well, I am Asian. Anyway, but like, if you think of other shows as well, there's a lot of, like Naruto, there's a lot of flamboyant characters
yeah.
which genders are ambiguous or they have, it doesn't necessarily strictly to villains as well. For example, I remember, was it Gurren Lagann?
Leron. Yeah,
Leron. I remember I wrote that down because I watched a show and it was like, this is on Netflix. It's in America. And he was like, he was a very flamboyant character.
Right.
In what series?
in Gurren Lagann, I can't really pronounce that word, but it's pronounced Gurren. So if you search it, G-U-R-R-E-N on Netflix, you should be able to find it. Yeah. But this Luren guy, he's a flamboyant character, but he's kind of awesome as well in the sense that he's a genius mechanic. And it seems that they want to build this very flamboyant character, but it's very credible as well. Like, he's not downplayed, he's not comic relief. He doesn't have a flamboyant job. He's a mechanic, and he's good at it, and he's helping the progress of the story. He has his own arc, which is amazing, because that's kind of depict how people view sexuality as well. Because it's kind of, I guess the whole show is about, you know, not sticking to what label you have.
Right.
So I feel like this character really exemplify that idea.
Although,
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. What I found with Gurren Lagann and a few other anime is that when they do try to portray LGBT characters, they tend to be really cool, but at the same time, they draw on a lot of stereotypes, which in one way it might be a good thing. In another way, it's unfortunate that you kind of have to portray this character using a lot of these stereotypes, which end up being, I feel, a bit of a comic relief.
Like you said, there's a lot of characters. I think in terms of anime and manga, there are multiple types of LGBT characters. There are types of manga and anime where they presumably have no homosexuality in it. I can't remember which one I saw, but it was about an utopia where man and woman was separated. But the storyline itself is really interesting, but it makes the assumption that there's no homosexuality. So it's weird in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a straight only world, which is, I find, first of all, it's a bit whitewashing.
Yeah.
There are anime where they solely romanticize gender fluid characters, like Uran hosts high school club.
Right.
Which we just talked about. It's basically a slice of life, which is like anime way of saying a drama series.
Yeah.
So it's to give the context to the audience, it's a show about this high school in Japan, and they have a club where handsome, dashing male students would serve beverage and flirt with the female customers or any customers for tips. And it's like a maid cafe kind of idea.
Yeah.
But it's gender bad. And then this girl student came in, but she looked really handsome and tomboyish. So she joined this club, and she started flirting, and she started playing this male role.
Right.
In her own way, and she kind of successful at it. And there's a lot of other roles and gender identity in that series as well. But it's like, it's really light and it's really subtle. But at the same time, they never identify themselves as a specific sexual identity. But they have like flings with both female and male characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, you know, that's just the way anime works.
So it's not kind of spelt out, but, you know, if you're paying attention, perhaps you can see
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah. Like, so many.
In the first episode, actually, as Haruhi, the protagonist of the show, as the other characters catch on that she's actually a girl, because when she appears, she's dressed up as a boy, and people don't catch on until sort of later. At the end of the first episode, she mentions that she doesn't really care either way whether or not people see her as a boy or a girl.
Oh, okay.
So that it was a little bit spelled out, I would say. And later on in the series, we find out that her dad is, to use the term that they use in the anime, is an Okama, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's sort of like a cross between a...
I believe he sort of identified as bisexual, didn't he?
He did.
At one point. And then after his wife died. Yeah, then he kind of had a transition to doing drags. And he kind of justified himself for it. But if you watch the anime, I feel like he's kind of more justifying it so that he feels comfortable doing it. But at the same time, it's who he has always been.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just kind of transitioning towards who he was always been.
The one thing I do like about the... the depiction of the dad in Orin High School Host Club is that it's not overdone, mm-hmm. which I find when you have a lot of when you have an Okama character mm-hmm. in a lot of anime, they tend to be sort of, again, comic relief. They tend to be really overdone. But this dad is very human, and he does a good job of balancing out that comic relief role with sort of telling the story about how he got to where he is.
Mm-hmm. Well, in most drama series, it's very important about character progressions. So in this series in particular, I really like how they portray sexuality as something more fluid, and then you don't really just stick to one side of the spectrum. Sometimes people shift, sometimes, you know, people feel more comfortable staying in that spectrum. And that just kind of glorifies what, you know, sexuality is supposed to be. It's supposed to be fluid, I think.
I want to talk about how anime is kind of a medium for the Japanese to explore the boundaries of their own culture. I think we had a conversation last night, and you mentioned something that was like, wow, that's actually really cool. But before we play that, what I found out was called Cherry Blossom Kiss in English by Chieko Kawabe. Which you might recognize as the intro tune to Orin High School Host Club. I had to Google and try and find an English wiki fan site that actually had it listed in English. And as soon as we get back, we're actually joined by Sebastian.
To all the fans
as well.
Of this show, you're welcome.
Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's queer media, and we're coming at you from the capital. I am Luke Smith.
Jake Nguyen.
And Josh Romeo.
I'm Sebastian.
Oh.
What are you doing to me?
Well, there's two mics in there, and it's always 50-50 yeah. as to which one you're at. So Sebastian has joined us. We want to apologize for Sebastian's tardiness. He has one commitment on a Thursday, just one commitment, which is this show.
He's going to rub it in because this is a rare occasion.
And he's scheduled
where he can tease me.
He scheduled a meeting exactly for doing the show, so that's why he was late.
Uh huh.
So yeah. Anyways, I wanted to talk about how we had a conversation last night, and you were saying about how the Japanese tend to use anime to kind of explore social issues.
Oh wow, do they ever?
Oh,
so
yes.
Japanese culture is very. Quite restricted. It's they're very businesslike, and you actually lived for a time in Japan, so I think maybe you can speak to that.
Yes, I did.
But you know, I think it's interesting how anime is that creative outlet.
Well, I think it's so okay. So anime in general, as a broad sweeping term, is not necessarily an outlet, but I think it's especially in the past maybe 10 years, they've really latched on to science fiction. In the way that Britain latched on to science fiction in the 60s and 70s. Mm. So,
i.e. Doctor Who and so on. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking more like, you know, Clockwork Orange or Fahrenheit 454 or Big Brother, 1984, that
oh,
kind of
like
thing.
Oh, like George Orwell kind of stuff.
Yeah, like more classic science fiction, putting a normal person, like normal to the to the point of ultimate blandness, into an exceptional situation.
Well, it's worth pointing out that Doctor Who was created in the 60s as well, so it really is.
I thought it was late 50s. I thought it was 59 that it aired.
A long time ago, anyway.
Yeah, a long time ago, anyway. But it's basically you stick a normal person into an extreme situation and see how he reacts, and then you can explore large issues that way. And I don't know. I think right now the thing on TV that really jumps out at me in that sense would be Westworld. You have you do have exceptional people in there, but the technicians who are going around trying to figure out what's happening. It's very much exploring, like, what is the nature of humanity. They had this huge speech on what is the nature of consciousness. And I don't know if you're not familiar with philosophy, then, you know, congratulations. You're a lucky person. And that's not even sarcasm. But anyway, there's this whole concept in philosophy called a philosophical zombie, and they actually went into the philosophical zombie debate, but they also went into the philosophical zombie debate on Ghost in the Shell. And the philosophical zombie debate is, if you have two people, one person who has a self-aware conscience and one person who has no consciousness, but you can't tell them apart, is it worth saying that consciousness is a real thing? And so it's this really complicated thing. And then any series whatsoever that has a robot or an android or any kind of AI, they did this in Chobits. And Chobits was meant to be a comedy series. But they had, like, laced throughout the whole thing, like, she's just a robot. What could she possibly know about anything? But then there was also this sort of secondary dialogue of, if she looks like she has emotion and she reacts like she has emotion, she probably has, if not human emotion, she has her own version of it. And so you get into really interesting, complicated philosophical conversations. And I think it's just that people have gotten so used to the popular anime that's been ported over. So you look at the Dragon Ball series, you look at Sailor Moon, you look at Speed Racer, you look at sort of the big ones that have been ported over. And a lot of them aren't as speculative as some of the other ones. Psycho Pass was a really,
That's so
really speculative. It is so drenching heavy in philosophical debate, especially sort of a Hobbesian, like, to what degree should the state protect its people, and can it do it to the point where it's just as harmful as other people are? Like, really complicated, difficult questions that we've been talking about for 300 years and we still don't have an answer. And they get into really big depth in a lot of manga and anime series. And even then, like, if you look at Akira, like, one of the biggest anime movies ever, the manga series, which was 6 books long, and the movie is basically just like a best of. It barely even covers the series. The manga series really gets into very complicated questions about war and violence and independence and nationhood. And the movie is just this really cool thing with the ball and the big guy who, like, swells up and he's like, Kaneda! It's really cool. But Ghost in the Shell, same thing. If you read the series, because Ghost in the Shell is based on a manga series, very profoundly philosophical and a lot more comedic as well. The tanks, the anthropomorphic tanks, what are they called in the...
I honestly have not read the whole thing.
Okay. So. But you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I know I have heard of the show before. Also, I feel, ever since you said that, I just feel bad that Scarlett Johansson, they're making a live version of Ghost in the Shell, and then they're whitewashing it with Scarlett Johansson. I'm like...
Because there are no Asian female actors. Obviously, like, that's not... don't exist.
Lucy Liu is too old to do an action series, and because she's over 25, and for women, if you're over 25, you're dead. Bruce Willis can still make action movies into his 60s, but no women.
Helen Mirren.
They're waiting for another age. Exception.
There you go.
Yeah. Helen Mirren is...
I'm not saying that's sensible. Jamie Lee Curtis did True Lies in her 50s. Lucy Lawless is almost 50, and she's doing Ash vs. Evil Dead, and she's kicking butt. Oh my god, watch that show, it's a great show. But no, we're here to talk about anime and manga.
So what I want to talk about then,
have we gone over terms, by the way?
In a second, I want to talk about, just before I lose my thought here, from you two, you know, when it comes to manga, which is the comic book which we defined earlier, do they explore, because we talked a little bit about some of the more popular anime shows and how they sort of have some representation, but not really. But do the mangas then explore sexual orientation and identity in more depth? Like, if you're trying to see that in anime or manga, is manga where you should go to look for it because of the depth of the medium? Or
I would say as a, and like in any media format, if you're reading, it's if you're reading manga or reading any book, it's still better. It's always better than the movie or the series. That's just the way it is. It's more detailed. It's more it's better, I guess. I look at my manga list because I have this site where I have like 100 or 200 mangas I'm just subscribing. I just listed a few that has like LGBT characters. And it's like Mahou Sensei Negima, which is basically like a...
Oh, yes.
Yes. It's just a bunch of... It's basically, not to give it away, a bunch of girls swam around this magician little boy who's about 10 years old. And it's, it creates kind of a harem situation. I don't know how to... How would you...
But he's 10.
Yeah. Any series with Mahou in the title, M-A-H-O-U is usually how it's Romanized, is Mahou means magic. And so whenever you see Mahou in a title, it's going to be, if it's not a magical girl series, it'll be a magical girl genre, even if the main character is a boy. So Sailor Moon is the classic.
We discussed Sailor Moon.
So you talked about Uranus, right? Uranus and Neptune?
Yes, we talk about Uranus and Neptune, and then the Starlight Sailors, the one that was transsexuals, transgender.
Yeah, way more. The original, if you watch the original, it's way more. Actually, if you watch the original of a lot of things, if you watch the original of Dragon Ball, not Zed, because everybody goes on about Dragon Ball Z as if that is Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball Z
if
is
If you
overrated.
Watch the original Dragon Ball series, just Dragon Ball, no modifier, it is profoundly sexual and very funny. Also, I learned this some time ago. Do you know why they took 5 episodes of just sitting there screaming and turning into balls of light instead of actually fighting in Dragon Ball? Do you know why it was so slow? Because the animators were moving faster than the guy who's writing the series. It was filler.
I never thought about that.
So if you look at Sailor Moon, the original 1980s series versus Sailor Moon Crystal, Sailor Moon Crystal, by episode 5... They had already met Sailor Venus. In the original, it was episode, I think, 49 when she finally joined.
I watched the entire original series from the beginning till like the end of like when American doesn't even broadcast it.
Yeah.
And oh my god, it's a lot of content.
It's all filler. It's all filler. If ever there's an episode where you go to the beach or where you go to the spa, it's probably filler.
If anyone has seen Naruto, that's what it's like.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Curry of Life. That was the worst thing that has ever happened.
Curry of Life makes no sense.
Trying to fill the rest of us in on...
Honestly, if you just look it up, Curry of Life is famously the worst filler mini arc in any show. Just leave it at that. I would rather talk about...
Yeah, true. It's a ridiculous series. It's such a filler episode that you watch it and you just like... It has nothing to do with the series. It doesn't progress any character.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who has been involved with it either go away and live peacefully in the woods or die.
Yeah.
So it's never... So nobody will ever remember it. So Curry of Life is a perfect example, a prime example for fillers.
Bad filler, yes.
So, Joshua, what would be... What kind of representation have you seen in manga that you've come across in terms of the LGBT community?
Well, to be honest with you, I actually do watch more anime than I read manga. So, for the most part, when I, you know... read manga, it's tends to be some of the more popular ones. And I was going to mention this earlier when we were talking about Dragon Ball and Sailor Moon, but nowadays when you think about sort of the big three of manga and anime, you have sort of One Piece, Naruto, Bleach, they're not the most they're not the deepest anime, but they're the most popular.
I would say they're most Americanized.
Exactly.
Death Note, I would say, dethroned Bleach for a while.
But like Death Note ended too quickly.
Well, I mean, it's a miniseries.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I was really sad.
I actually have strong opinions about One Piece. So
what is miniseries for anime? Is that like 50,000 episodes compared to like
usually it'll be 13, 26, or 52, which sounds really weird, but it's always multiples of 13.
It's seasons. Yeah.
Rarely is it not, but it usually is. So if it's 13, like Chobits was 13 episodes, and it's kind of celebrated as a classic of anime. Have either of you seen Chobits?
I have not.
Chobitsu, it's great because they actually, there's this robot comes to life and he actually has to teach her about daily life. And it's a great scene for learning Japanese because, like, she comes home and he's like, now, when you come home, you're supposed to say tadaima, which means I'm back. And then I'm supposed to say da 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 da. And so he actually gives, like, little lessons in daily life. And then he pulls out a wallet and she calls it a purse. And he's like, no, it's a saifu. But saifu in Japanese means purse and wallet. But he's like, purse just means a Western purse. And this is a saifu. And she's like, oh, so you actually learn bits. And he, like, teaches you about, like, you know, this is because the toilet, most Japanese homes still have the toilet and the shower and bath in separate rooms. And so he actually explains when you use each and what they're for. And if somebody's in there, how do you knock? And it was really interesting, just daily life stuff, as well as philosophical stuff about whether or not androids can have feelings.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of anime, there's a lot of themes that are being explored. I mean, I remember a lot of people, like one of my friends, who's, I met him in college, and he seems like this bulky black guy, Brad. You met him. But like, this one day just came to me, I was like, hey, would you watch this anime show, Code Geass? Have either of you watched Code Geass?
I know about it, but I've never watched it.
Yeah, so it's a supernatural political theme show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely 100% about colonialism, mm-hmm. because it's not subtle about it. The antagonist, it's literally the emperor of a fictional country that's taking over the world called Britannia.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's set, it is set in Japan, where Britannia just took it over and renamed them Area 11, which is basically just, I think it's stolen from Hunger Games. Anyway, the protagonists have to retake over the emperor, like the empire of Britannia and all that jazz, with a lot of mecha and giant weapons and superpowers. So it's a lot of anime action elements in it, but it's kind of explores the extreme themes of political colonialism. And there was a lot of because this guy have like. I don't know how to say this without spoiling the series, but he has his power, which kind of put a specific perspective on politics. So it's like you see it as a action political show, but it's kind of deeper than that. It's kind of like what is politics is not just operate on, you know, bipartisan relationship, but just by poor merits and power and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, I've watched a couple of episodes. I mean, I never grew up with anime, so that never happened, and I never got into. I mean, I think the closest I ever got was watching some Pokemon.
Like, you may have watched cartoons that were made in Korea or Japan, though, because Moomins were actually it was Japan that produced the Moomins cartoon series, and then
I never watched it.
Dubbed later on. The Moomins, for those who don't know, this is a completely different conversation.
Oh, it's not your favorite show. Yeah,
The Moomins are basically like the Winnie the Pooh of Finland, and there's a Moominland, like a theme park, Moominland theme park, on every continent in the world except for North America. If you go to Europe, they love it. They have two Moominlands in Japan alone. There's one in China. I think there's one in Australia. Like, the world loves the Moomins, but we've never heard of them. I think that's because of, like, the Disney hegemony of cartoons. But anyway... So earlier on when you asked whether you should read the manga or watch the anime, and when it comes to things like queer issues, I would definitely say the manga.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is it's purely a financial thing, because in general, when you're making a cartoon, there's no such thing as being left behind on the cutting room floor. There's no such thing as extra footage. It's so expensive to make even 5 seconds of animation that they storyboard the hell out of it. They get writers in. They get all sorts of people to double-check that it's definitely what they want to do. And so everything is tight. Whereas with a manga, the editors are a little bit more open. So earlier on, Jonathan mentioned One Piece, which is actually my favorite manga.
Mm-hmm.
And quite famously, the pictures are so incredibly high detail. For a while there, all the filler arcs in One Piece was just people going through, picking out things from the background of images and then making a story out of that and then doing like 5 episodes based on something else that had happened. But it's very high detail. A lot of stuff gets squeezed through, and there actually is a lot of interesting gender and sexuality representation in One Piece. But
number
it's
two.
Very subtle. Yeah. Bentham. Yes. Mr. Tu Bon Cré. Yes. And so there was this, during the, One Piece has this unique language around it, so you have these things called sagas. Normally when you're talking about things, you're talking about story arcs. Mm-hmm. But One Piece has story arcs that are longer than most whole other series. Mm-hmm. And so you have a collection of story arcs that makes a saga. And so the saga of the Baroque Works, during that there was all these villains, and then there was always a male-female pair, where the female was Miss and then some holiday, and then the male was just Mr. and then a number. Except for one of them, which was Mr. Two, who was also Bon Cré. And Bon Cré is a Cré. No, the Bon Festival is it's just a traditional Japanese festival, and you put a pyre on the river and you light it on fire and you do some stuff and then you push it down and it doesn't matter. But the reason why he had both was because he was actually Okama. Now, Okama is this really interesting, it's an identity we don't have in the West. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to talk about how some, not all cultures have a gay identity, they have mm-hmm. something else that's like it. Or in some cultures, gay isn't what you are, it's what you do. When you're looking at anime, it's actually very interesting. Sometimes they incorporate sort of modern Western gay identities, and sometimes they have this sort of other thing, like Neptune and Uranus in Sailor Moon was fantastic because they didn't identify as lesbian, they just loved each other. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a part of their identity, it wasn't who they were, it was just what they did. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Tu Bon Cré was very interesting because he was Okama, and Okama, the closest equivalent we have in the West is like the Greeks had this, where it was sort of like this sort of effeminate male who's definitely male, but somehow being effeminate made them more masculine in its own roundabout way. And they were definitely men, but they often wore women's clothing. And it was just this kind of like deliberate ambiguity that they played with. A lot of Okama traditionally in Japan engaged in the theater. So it's kind of like the British traditional like 1700s and before version of drag, where it was like men in women's clothing, but they were definitely men, but they were also kind of not, but they were. And then there was, what was the Okama queen's name?
Ivankov.
Ivankov. So yeah, Ivankov, right. Ivankov, who had the horo horo ability, which is just hormone ability, could inject you with hormones and change your body into whatever you want. So basically had like transsexual powers, which he/she used often. I'm not saying he/she to be like, racy about it. He actually regularly changed his physical sex back and forth all the time and was deliberately designed to look exactly like Dr. Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror. And
that's true.
And there was this whole thing in there, like when you went to the Okama Kingdom and everybody celebrated the fact that their social gender was ambiguous, even though a lot of them were very obviously biologically male or biologically female. They embraced being in between. It was very interesting. But I don't think there's... I think Bentham is the only one who's actually openly gay.
Yeah.
Preferred men.
Yeah, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Although there was one time, I think, right before the time skip, where Sanji was training on the...
the Okama Island.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And everybody was chasing after him and...
Oh, yeah, and he may... Well, I think that was just... He may or may not have enjoyed the Okama lifestyle. I don't necessarily think that made him gay. Robin as well
mm-hmm.
makes... Robin is... I love Robin so
Me
much.
Too.
She is...
best character.
Like, every so often, they'll be like, you know, we are supposed to meet back at the ship. It's a pirate-themed show. And like, we're supposed to be back at the shift at 4, and we don't know where Nami is. And Robin's reply would be something like, maybe she's being murdered. And everybody would be like, that's a horrible thing to say. And anyway, she would scream out. She'd be like, well, maybe she's being strangled. And it's just, she has this very dark sense of humor. And then every so often you see the thought bubbles, and it's always like kitties and rainbows and sparkles. And it's really, she's a fascinating character. It doesn't matter.
So when we get back after Blood Eagle from the album Blood Eagle by Saber Pulse, we're going to be talking about maybe is it appropriate to be looking for Western concepts of LGBT identity in in a non-Western format. So we'll explore that topic in just a few minutes. I cut myself short there. How rude. But before we get into that, here is Blood Eagle. There are some amazing remixes of this, by the way, by Saber Pulse, and we'll be back just after this. Hello and welcome back. And that was Saber Pulse's Blood Eagle from the album Blood Eagle. And I hadn't listened to it all the way through, and I'm like, I actually really kind of like this. And Saber Pulse is, of course, a
chiptune.
Chiptune, he's a cutie.
He's also a cutie.
He's a cutie patootie. And he
although
is from
Unicorn
the UK.
Kid is slightly cuter because Unicorn Kid has the advantage of being 6 inches taller, Scottish, and openly gay.
Mm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, if you're listening, Unicorn Kid, you're more than welcome on our show, and maybe I'll lapse. We'll see. But I had a question before we jump to that song, and that question is, because you were talking a bit about the, I want to say the Okama?
Okama, yeah.
Yeah.
The female equivalent is Onabe. And just to give you an idea, because the actual history of the word is hilarious, an Okama literally is actually an iron round-bottom pot for making rice in. And I can never remember the word for it, but I remember the translation. The Japanese equivalent of fag hag is the word for rice that is burned onto the bottom of a pot. And then onabe is like a Japanese, it's kind of like a Japanese Dutch oven. It's like a crockery that you can like fill with stew and then you could just put the whole thing into a fire.
Oh, like so a crock
it's
pot?
Very,
it's a crock
like,
pot,
it's
yeah.
essentially the same thing, but like...
So wow, the reason why onabe is because if you turn it over and look at the bottom, it looks like a perfectly shaped man's butt, especially a teenage man's butt.
Okay.
So like that sort of like 19-year-old gymnast kind of a shape to it. Mm-hmm. And then onabe, it looks like a pregnant woman's belly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I like it. But we were talking about these distinctly Japanese terms that come out of Japanese culture.
Yeah.
So I think this show is almost disingenuous in this premise that we're trying to find identities that are Western. And we've talked about this a lot, the idea that gay, how we understand it, is very much shaped by the American experience of being gay. So the Stonewall riots, yeah. you know, the HIV epidemic, yeah. you know, our experiences are shaped by, unfortunately, from Canadian perspective.
And it's not that, you know, Britain, Canada, and Australia haven't had input, but it's like we've had input
yeah.
on
but,
the process.
You know, the hegemony of the American state means that our identity is Americanized. So is it appropriate to try and find gay identities in a Japanese art form or in other cultures?
I think it depends on what kind of American gay image you're looking for in Japanese. Because Japanese anime and manga in general, I feel it's very diverse. It's very... I have read multiple mangas and animes that supposedly set in America...
Mm-hmm.
Set in Britain, set yeah. in like Western world, but all of them speak Japanese and all of them look Japanese. Which is, I mean, if you're looking visually into a cartoon and it looks cartoonish, you really can't tell a person's nationality.
Yeah.
And if they're speaking Japanese, your mind automatically thinks they're Japanese.
And if you can tell the nationality, it might be a racist depiction.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you're...
What was that one where they're like, they were like teenagers and they had these robots... And there was like a Scottish person in the class. It was an international school.
Oh,
the representations of the Scots were just hilarious.
Kuro Mokuro is on Netflix. Huh. It's basically if you mix Transformers and what's another alien invasion movie? Anyway, it's basically
District 9.
I guess in a sense, it's it's basically a bunch of. Aliens come to Earth and decided to take over using giant mechas of machine that looks like Transformer. And this samurai guy has stolen a mecha by himself. Well, a mecha, it just has to do with story. But it's fought off these aliens. But it's really interesting because this entire organization that's supporting him and supporting the students are United Nations. The characters, the professor, the researcher, the commander, all foreigners. Some of them have brown hair and mustache, and that's specifically to depict that they're not Japanese, but in a Japanese context, it still is. So you sometimes can't help to think, to assume that these characters are depicted under the Japanese perspective. So if you're looking for American depiction of homosexuality, it might be either a parody or it might be either like an opinion or a perspective that's different mm-hmm. from Japanese. Because like I remember Cardcaptor Sakura.
Mm-hmm.
There's this little... Okay, so the Cardcaptor Sakura is about a little girl who's going out to catch magical cards that escaped. and, you know, if she catches a card called Jump, she can jump really high. It's basically tarot cards. Anyway, she has a friend who would dress her up in this ridiculously really cute costume and dresses while she's doing magic, and then film her and go really... She's really cute, and she's, like, a best friend, and she's always really supportive. They have, like, a not romantic size relationship, but if you know Japanese culture, girls dressing each other up and, you know, appreciating each other in a friendly, maybe seem by American as lesbianism, might not be lesbianism. Mm-hmm. It's just Japanese culture.
It's how it's constructed.
Yeah. So the Western concept of the bromance is very modern, but that is what a normal friendship would look like. And actually, there was a common problem that I had when I was working in a middle school where the teachers would just be like, just don't ask questions, don't bother, you don't want to get involved, it's just going to end messy. And it was, you know how, okay, so in Japan, especially middle schools and high schools, girls go to the bathroom by themselves, but boys go together in groups.
Oh. Hmm.
And the boys are going to the bathroom in groups so that they can do... Number three, let's call it.
Yeah, I'm not on the same page here. You'll have to tell me later. It's fine.
Number three.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So number one. Yeah, number three is something that only boys can do. Let's just put it that way. And it's that's a thing that they did. It was one of them was like, I got to take care of this or I'm going to explode, and the other ones will be like, you know what, me too. And the adult teachers were encouraged to go the extra distance to the adult male bathroom to let them have their space. Mm. And that's a normal part of growing up.
I mean, the way Japanese deal with puberty is very interesting because puberty in American society, it's kind of, they glorify it and they kind of accentuate it at the same time. You see puberty as something you go through at a certain age, but at the same time, they mock sexuality and they mock promiscuity and they mock all kind of a teenager's life. And in a lot of anime, that doesn't happen. They glorify the sexuality, they glorify the whole dating and a harem situation where multiple girls into one guy or the reverse. And it doesn't just limit to a specific age or specific like sexual situation. It could be, you know, just two characters having emotional support, or they have sexuality and then they are kind of into each other, into the opposite sex. They prefer perhaps flamboyant, but they still have masculine traits, that kind of thing. So it's more diverse than the American perspective, I would say.
Now, one of the things I quickly wanted to address is how anime and manga differs from yaoi and bara.
Yeah.
Because if you are Googling these things, I recommend Safe Search On, because... And maybe you can flesh that out a bit, Sebastian.
Yeah, I'm looking up the...
Definition?
Well, no, the translation, because yaoi is actually a contraction, and I can never... Oh, here we go. I know it's yanashi.
I know yaoi. It's...
Yamanashi, ochinashi, iminashi is the actual... The whole thing. And it's basically... no plot, no point, no climax. And it's basically just a bunch of stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Imagine a soap opera where they don't have that dramatic da-da-dum moment. And it's just like people and emotions. It's just constantly feelings. And there's it just feelings with no particular plot or order or reason to it. And that's
kind of what it is.
Yeah, it's basically just this long strung out romance with no particular beginning, middle, or end. And yaoi also has... And this is... I wonder if Jonathan has had this experience
Joshua.
As well. Joshua, sorry. Why do I keep saying Jonathan? I don't know.
Yeah, you keep missing.
Anyway, I'm sorry. A lot of the gay male-themed anime is the basic plot line. And this is also a warning if you want to start watching these sorts of things. The basic plot line is... If you date rape a straight guy enough times, he will fall in love with you. And there are a lot of yaoi stories that go in that direction. Mm-hmm. And that kind of is the core of yaoi. Now, if you want to just look at romance and the sort of interpersonal relationship, you'll be looking for BL, which is boys love. And it is fundamentally about the relationship. And if there is any taking off the shirt and kissing and all that sort of thing. It's usually like
sensual.
Sensual, and you fade off to the window and you just see the kissing.
Makes me think of like Harlequin romances almost.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Oh, there's also like a... Because I can you say fat cack on air?
Well, you just did.
I just did.
If anyone
earlier,
is
yeah.
offended, yeah. I apologize.
I'm so sorry. But I did have a friend who's a female, and she's really into...
I really like the term fruit fly, which I thought
okay,
was
fruit flies.
Hilarious.
I used to have fruit flies.
But yeah, both.
Anyway, who's into Yao and Bara and stuff.
Well, it's because it's made for women.
It's actually... Right, yes, right. That's my
it's
point.
Made it's by women for women.
Yes, so I think, well, the way she explained it to me, because I read... I wouldn't say I read a lot of it, but I have read some of it, and I feel yaoi, it's a lot more about the seduction and the story. So if you actually ever
do you know why that came to be? Why the women in Japan love these stories so much? Like the history of it. Not the history of it, but like the reasoning behind it.
Well, you have like a minute, so you know, cliff note.
So the basic idea is that when you have a man and a woman in a romance, you have traditional gender roles, and you have asymmetrical access to power, and you have all that sort of stuff. If a man wants to see, if a woman wants to read a romantic story about a man, the only way to put him on the same level as the person he's trying to seduce...
It's to level the playing field.
It's to level the playing field by putting another man in there and not having traditional gender roles. You know, he has a job, she doesn't, or he's the boss and she's the employee. If you want actual romance of two equals... Two men is how they solve that, and it's less about the gay thing, and it's basically just like it's just more dudes. They like dudes. They like romance. They see they like watching dudes and romance, so they get to see two dude romance stories at the same time.
Like Bara, I'm just saying, it's really short. It's about 10 to 50 pages, and it just it's a really short story. It doesn't. It has a abrupt beginning and has an abrupt ending. But basically, the middle and the climax is the two guys bone. But like in a sensual way that progressed through the story.
Bara also has a version of hypermasculinity that it is identical to the West. Large, muscular men, muscle bears. Quite often, they have a lot of chest hair.
And
or you'll see
furries. A lot of furries.
Sometimes you'll see skinny, like jock kind of guys, but still muscular. But that all that said, the one boys love series that I would suggest, because it's not... Actually, there is a scene where stuff starts to happen where they grab the wrist. You know something bad's going to happen when someone grabs somebody's wrist. That starts to happen, and the guy's like, what are you doing? That's stupid. Get away from me. It's a series. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Sekaiichi Hatsukoi. It doesn't really have an English translation.
Sekaiichi is it?
But it's basically, there's a guy who works in a publishing house. I don't know if you've ever seen. I'll tell you about it later.
Anyway, unfortunately, that is all we have time for today. I think we've kind of maybe touched the surface of this.
Barely.
Check out our website. We'll try and put some links into the episode when it's posted online, www.velvetstudio.ca, and let us know what you think. Also, we have just began our podcast for Making Time with Jibber Jabber, which is dinner and conversation with different people in the community, so also check that out. I mean, that's all for now. We're playing out with Love, Live, Get High from the Peptides.